Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and I'm going to lay something out for you here, and I'm going to ask you to hang with me while I do it. Okay, we're going to talk about a very particular comic book today. It's called Mouse. It's by Art Spiegelman, and it is the first comic book ever to win the Pulitzer Prize. Now, you know we talk about comics graphic novels monthly with Boston University's Joel Christian Gill, and we've mentioned the legendary Mouse before. We picked it this month for a very specific set of reasons. So Mouse is a perennial favorite for book challenges and bans. It tells the story of the Holocaust in black and white sketches where the Jews are mice and the Nazis are cats, and that has been on our minds for two reasons. First, people in Massachusetts are challenging books in our libraries. Now, challenge is a request to restrict or remove the book. They've been doing that at accelerating rates. According to the American Libraries Association, the number of challenges quadrupled in Massachusetts from 2021 to 2022. Second, as we talked about here on the show earlier this week, Massachusetts saw a more than 30% rise in hate crimes in the state in that same period in time, driven in part by anti-Semitic attacks and white supremacist propaganda, including anti-LGBTQ threats and harassment. And third, among the books challenged in Massachusetts in 2022, at least half were about LGBTQ subjects, gender identity, or Judaism and the Holocaust. Now, we thought, putting those things together, it was time to talk more in depth about Mouse. So, welcome back to Joel Christian Gill, the inaugural chair of the Boston University MFA program in visual narrative. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And a guest that you've brought to us before, also back, Hillary Shute, distinguished professor of English and Art and Design at Northeastern University, also author of Mouse Now, Selected Writing, which was released last year. Hillary Shute, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
So, Hillary, it feels like Mouse is kind of in a moment. I'm going to start with a little bit of sound. It's an interview from 2002. It's with Chicago's Tonight's Phil Ponce. This is Art Spiegelman, author, about the impact of Mouse.
Mouse has somehow become, in the history of American thought about World War II and the Jews, is a transitional work because it takes certain risks by existing in a form that people don't immediately believe is the appropriate form for such a thing. When people hear a comic book about the Holocaust, I think everybody, including me, would just roll up their eyes going, this isn't a good idea.
Well, that was my reaction. That was my reaction for years when I saw your book at Borders or Barnes & Noble.
And yet it's a very nuanced way to be, for me at least, who understand that particular lingo of comics, to work through this.
So I'm going to ask you both this same question. Hillary, I'll start with you, then I'll go to Joel. I want people who may not have encountered this book to understand how important it is in the pantheon of not only comics and the comic world, but also Holocaust literature. So tell us a little bit, Hillary.
Sure. So it's really hard to overstate the importance of Mouse from the perspective of thinking about the canon of Holocaust literature. So actually, the writer David Samuels, in one of the essays in my book, Mouse Now, he makes the claim that Mouse is actually the most important American work of Holocaust literature. And I think this is the case, or people could make this case, for a couple of reasons. One is that Spiegelman is inventing a new language, which is to say comics, with both seeing and showing and rich layers that are visual layers and verbal layers to convey both a horrifying testimony of his father's experience surviving Auschwitz and Dachau, but also a work that uses the qualities and the aspects of comics, its openness, its sort of fascinating grammar, to be able to incorporate attention to the problems of trying to express that kind of testimony. So it's really a two-pronged work. It's a biography of sorts about his father's experience and his father's testimony, and it's an autobiography about his own struggles to try to visualize something that he has called the oxymoron of life in the death camps, which is to say the actual day-to-day experience of his father you know, in Nazi Germany and in Nazi Poland.
What else should we know, Joel?
I think one of the things to think about when you think about Maus is the idea that it is probably one of the pinpointed, I don't think there's a cartoonist alive who will not say that Maus isn't an inspiration. Because a lot of people, up until the point that Maus wins a Pulitzer, I think there's a generation of cartoonists who were like, I'm going to draw superheroes. And I think when people start seeing stories like Maus and other stories that are out there, but specifically Maus, it's like, I can tell a really serious story. And one of the things that I think specifically that resonated with me with Maus is the way in which the language of comics is used to create a connection with a reader, right? This is the thing that I talk about all the time about like how empathy works. And comics, I believe, are empathy machines. And I think Maus does that by letting you see these long things that you never have to say, right? You never have to like connect to the idea of the historical connections to Itchy and Scratchy and Tom and Jerry and Ignatz Maus and Crazy Cat. You don't talk about that, right? It's just that boils down to the idea that cats do things to mice. Right. And that's the thing that we just embedded in the story. And so you never have to say, here's this long metaphor. And I think a lot of cartoonists have connected to the idea of like being able to tell serious stories with things that people don't typically take seriously, like, you know, Tom and Jerry or Itchy and Scratchy or any of those things. And I think that that's the thing that I took from it is like, this is, you know, we teach a class here, Davida Pines teaches a class here called Serious Comics. And it's one of those types of ideas. It's serious comics, right? With these simplistic forms. And it almost, in a way for me, it sort of cements the idea of the way in which European comics have always been sort of a genre as opposed to like a, you know, like more of a medium as opposed to a genre. And it sort of like cements it for me and a lot of other cartoonists that, you know, stories in comics form can take shape in a lot of different ways. And the last thing that I want to say about this, and this is back to the empathy piece, is the interesting thing about the fact that they are banning books. This is a clear indication that comics do create empathy, and they ban them because they're working, right? They actually make people see things that they haven't seen before in other forms of media because we really pour ourselves into those characters, the more simplistic they are. And so by pouring ourselves in them, we feel them on a much more visceral level. And I think that that's the thing that scares people who don't like the ideas of, you know, queer kids or black kids or Jewish people surviving the Holocaust.
So there's a lot in there, and I want to pick up on a couple of pieces. I'm going to be playing a little more sound from Art Spiegelman here. And Hillary, I'm going to turn to you. There is this complexity of our anticipation or belief that when a story is told by pictures, it's for children. Juxtaposed with this idea of serious comics, to use the phrase that you just brought out, Joel. And what was really striking to me in reading Maus, which was... A, that in some ways it was almost easier to take in the story, the full horror of what was unfolding in front of me because it was mice and cats, right? But also B, the fact that the full horror of what was unfolding in front of me was happening in art in front of me because it was a comic. So in 2002, Maus was banned. After a Tennessee school district voted to remove it, 2022, after a Tennessee school district voted to remove it from their eighth grade language arts curriculum. So Art Spiegelman was talking to Democracy Now! After the vote. Here it is.
Children should be protected, and I never intended it to be for young adults, children, whatever. But I've had to modify my position over the years because I've now met many, many children who studied it in school, who found it on their own, who were given it by their parents. And it actually is received with a degree of real wisdom in their reading based on the people I've talked to, the young people. So I give up. It's comics are for whoever can understand them. Certainly the school board doesn't really.
So, you know, this... But what about the children argument that so often goes into the middle of the book banning conversation, Hillary? I've thrown a bunch at you there, but I know you've thought about it. So pick it up. Pick it up from there.
Yes. Thank you. I've thought about Maus probably more than any other book that I've ever encountered. So, I think there are a couple of pieces here. And one is that, as Art was saying in that clip, when he first published Mouse in 1986, that's when the first volume comes out, the second volume comes out in 1991, he was very adamant that this was a work that, you know, took place in comics form, but that it was for adults. So he even turned down a young adult award that he was given for Mouse. It was a kind of polemical move. You know, he wanted people to recognize comics as having this serious potential. That position has really changed for him over the years. And I think, you know, the recent book banning of Mouse at the eighth grade level has really opened his eyes to this. But I think the way he put it to me, and probably in other, you know, venues too, other than the one that you just played, is that, you know, he has a kind of all ages approach to Mouse now. He told me he has a kind of democratic vision for Mouse readers. And he said, you know, they're very stupid adult readers and very smart kid readers. So as he put it in that clip you played, you know, Mouse is for anybody who is there to meet it and encounter it. And, you know, speaking of the idea of encountering Mouse, I think you hit on something so key, which is about the force of Mouse as a work that visualizes horrific aspects of history. And, you know, when Mouse was banned in January 2022 in the McMinn County School District, you know, the school board meeting, which resulted in the ban, is public. It's on the website of the local news venue, the Tennessee Holler. And you can hear school board members signaling out graphic violence as a problem. So there were two reasons the book was nominally banned, and that's bad language and one small image of Spiegelman's mother drawn in human form after she had taken her own life. So those were the stated reasons. I think the actual reasons have to do with the graphic images. Mouse is a text that is invested at any level of reading in asking readers as a kind of ethical proposition to encounter just a shred of the horror that Vladek Spiegelman, Art's father, encountered in his life. That is why Art Spiegelman has always insisted on having a modified swastika on the cover of Mouse. Mouse was actually banned in Russia in 2015 because of the modified swastika on its cover, which ostensibly violated anti-Nazi propaganda laws. But anyone who sees Mouse and sees the subtitle, which is A Survivor's Tale, can tell this is not a work of Nazi propaganda, but a work that is about the horrors of Nazism and doesn't want to flinch in delivering some aspect of asking readers to encounter that horror as a concrete image.
And I think also, Hillary, just to add to what you're saying, is that in my experience, the people that tend to want to ban books have not read them. They have only read the moral panic and the outrage that is generated by these books. And they actually spend a lot of time talking about things that don't even relate to the book. And so, and the idea that Tiziana brought up just about, like, what about the children, is literally a fascist rallying cry to demonize people. Like, it's always about the idea of protecting people, because when kids are reading, you know, eighth grade kids are reading Mouse, they are building an empathy toward the oppression that happened to Jewish people. When they are reading a march, they are reading a story about the oppression that happened to John Lewis and Black people in those times. When they're reading stories like Genderqueer or any of these other things, they're reading about the crises that people are facing in a society that doesn't always honor these types of people. And when people who are from the dominant narratives hear those things and see those things, they don't like it, because it depositions them and decentralizes their narrative as a way, and they feel, because of their connection to the dominant narratives, or, like, I have to say, the people who believe that they are white, like Ta-Nehisi Coates has always said, but that idea that people who believe that they are white and sort of want to hold on to that don't want anything else coming in and taking over that narrative and taking away away their central idea. And I think books like Mouse and books like Genderqueer and books like March and those, all of the books that get banned are books that, threaten that central narrative. And they use the idea of what about the children and protection of the children as a dominant idea to do that, when in reality, the things that are hurting children are not drag queens reading. It's not books banned. It's actually gun violence and poverty.
So a note for people who are listening, I just took a picture of the cover of Mouse with that modified swastika. I put it out on my Twitter account. You can go look now so you can see a picture of the book cover that we're talking about. We're speaking with Joel Christian Gill of Boston University and Hillary Shoot of Northeastern University. We're talking about Mouse, which is a banned comic book. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning story of the Holocaust. And we haven't said this yet, and just to kind of round it out, Art Spiegelman is having extended conversations with his aging father in the book about his father's experiences in the Holocaust and at Auschwitz, and then illustrating the stories his father is telling him. That's how the comic book unfolds. So the two, we don't have a lot of time. There are two last things that I want to hit here. One, Joel, we've talked in the past about the fact that, in fact, people are turning more and more to this medium to teach. So interesting that we're having this conversation. Actually, let me go to you about that, Hillary, because there is something particularly instructive about using this art form for hard topics. That might be why people don't like it.
Yes, I mean, it's. I think there are two things happening. So one, just to pick up on what Joel was saying earlier, that I think sort of dovetails with your question, I had the enormous pleasure of seeing a librarian on the sort of front lines. Her name is Martha Hickson, and she's a public high school librarian in Annandale, New Jersey, give a talk at Northeastern in March. And I asked her in the Q&A after her talk, you know, why she thought so many of the works that are banned are graphic, right? Like Maya Kobabe's Genderqueer, Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, you know, Jerry Craft's New Kid, you know, Art Spiegelman's Mouse. And she actually said that she thought that they were so often banned because it's easier to decontextualize images if we understand this as political, as Joel was suggesting, and not as substantive, which I just thought was so interesting. You know, she says images can be taken out of context much more easily than words can. And that's part of the reason there's so many graphic books on these banned book initiatives and lists. So that's one part of it. I think the other part of it is that there is something very profound about images. You know, people see an image, for example, this is an image that has been controversial in Mouse, of four Jews hanging in a public street in the Polish city of Sosnowiec in 1942. A lot of people on both sides of this issue have written about and talked about this page. It's a striking page in Mouse. Some might say it's even spectacular. It's a large, unbordered image in the center of a page. Now, my view of that image is that it is asking people, as I was saying before, to encounter the horror of that reality, right? Hangings happened. People were killed. Art Spiegelman has said in response to the bans, they want a kinder, gentler Holocaust they can stand. You know, needless to say, that version doesn't exist. So this page is asking people to encounter that reality. On the other hand, that page has been taken up by people as, you know, this book shows images of this sort of monstrosity, and this is a reason that it shouldn't be in libraries and in school curricula. So I think it's a tough thing because people react so viscerally and so affectively to an image like that.
I'm pausing just because I'm actually taking in everything you just said. Every once in a while that happens to me. I will be soaking on that all weekend. Joel, with that ringing in our ears, the depth of that ringing in our ears, the other thing that is on my mind is when we talk to you again next month, we are going to talk with you about a comic version that you've got coming out of another book that's being banned, stamped from the beginning with Ibram X. Kendi, right?
Yeah.
And now you're going to take this medium and you're applying it to a book that's already being banned.
Yeah.
So A, you're doing that? And B, what do you expect to see from that? And we will talk about it more with you next month and Ibram X. Kendi, but let's talk about that for a minute.
I think one of the things to think about when looking at these books and the banning of books is that, you know, we've been sold a truth, and I say truth with a small t, about what society is. And books like Mouse, books like Stand from the Beginning, books like Maya Kobe's Genderqueer challenges the narrative. And it reminds me of this hip-hop song where CeeLo Green said, they don't want to hear the truth. They want to lie. They want you to lie to you, make it sound fly to you. And I think that is legitimately the idea that permeates American society. You don't want to hear the truth, because if you confront it with the truth, then you have to confront you. You know, it's like, it's kind of like going to therapy and having to realize that you've done some terrible things and you have to like reconcile those, right? It's that same idea, but on a massive macro level, right? It's like thinking about society and understanding that the truth sets you free. The truth is real, and the truth that we are who we are now, in spite of where we came from, is really powerful. And I think what lots of people do is they don't want to hear that truth. They don't want to hear that uncomfortable truth. They don't want to hear that these things are still happening, that this thing is endemic to who we are as a society. And in order, I say this a lot, and this is a thing that I talk about in the book a little bit, is that I believe that America has a problem with racism and this kind of oppression with disaffected people, kind of like an addict has a problem. Like, until you actually say, I have this problem, you will never fix it. And I think that there are people who refuse to want to say that problem. They only want to look at the bright side. It's the same people who like don't want to look at the garage because it's messy, so they keep the door shut. They don't like pretend like the garage doesn't. I mean, it's like there are so many metaphors about how we just sort of like, this is about avoidance. And like, people who want to ban these books want to avoid the topic. They don't want to talk about this stuff. They don't want to like be inundated with the idea that people are still oppressed and that there are still poor people in the world, because then it's a call to action. Because if you notice it now, you have to do something about it. And that's the hard part.
It makes me think, I knew a therapist who used to say this a lot, and then Dr. Sharon on Ted Lasso, actually, because it all comes back to Ted Lasso. Dr. Sharon on Ted Lasso actually said this in one of the episodes. She used a slightly different word, but the truth will set you free, but first it'll tick you off.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really the space that I think we're in. Hillary Shute, I'm going to come back to you now on that picture of the four mice / people hanging. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, one of the things that I come back to as we've been on this journey with Joel is that invitation into the spaces between the pictures. Right. And what's interesting about that page is when a picture sits alone on a page now, in a comic, I process it differently because it's the whole picture on the page, right? So it confronts me differently. I'm not being invited to the spaces in between. This is the picture, sister, right?
Exactly.
This is it, right? And that page was very, very striking to me as a result. But the other thing that challenged me with Mouse, Hillary, was all the times that I could skip pictures if I wanted to. Right? That on a page, there'd be picture after picture after picture. And if I'm being honest, sometimes I'd go back to a page and I'd look at what I skipped and see what it told me about what I had an appetite for and what I didn't, right? And it seems to me that there is something instructive about the way we choose to consume art in this form that tells us something about the story that art is telling us to. Now, maybe I'm, you know, trying to do my own therapy. I don't know, but there's something about this book that struck me that way.
I love that description of your process of reading. You know, it really jibes for me with something that Art Spiegelman has said often about Mouse, which was that his goal when he set out making this book was to make a comic that needed a bookmark. Mm. So I love that idea of reading and rereading. And certainly I know for myself, I've read Mouse, you know, at least a dozen times or more. And every time I go back to it, I find something new. And I think, you know, one of the things that's very powerful about comics is that it's non-directed reading. do you look at the words first or the images first?
Right.
Do you start in the upper left-hand corner and move horizontally to the right? You know, your eye takes in the whole page just on a cognitive neurological level, even if you're trying to start in the upper left-hand corner, you know, reading a graphic novel. And so there's so many ways in which the form of comics can put pressure on ideas of progress, causality, and linearity just at the level of reading that for me really rhymes with the overall message of Mouse, which is that time is scrambled. The past is not past. The past is in the present. These realities have not gone away. And so I think one of the powerful things comics does is to make us call attention to our own forms of reading.
Hilary Shoot is Distinguished Professor of English and Art and Design at Northeastern University. Joel Christian Gill, our regular guide and chair of the Boston University MFA program of visual narrative. Thank you so much to both of you. And Joel, we'll see you again next month.
So be back.
Hilary, thanks.